Timory Millington has been a passionate advocate for life as long as she can remember. Even with a busy speaking and radio schedule, she finds time to devote to her creative love of dance. Don Johnson is an author, speaker, and major motion picture film producer. Both hold master's degrees in theology, and together they cover the week's hottest stories from a Catholic worldview. From the Southern California studios of Immaculate Heart Radio, you're listening to Trending with Don and Timory.
Don, I think that as people are going back to school, getting ready to discuss more of those tough topics, new experiences while in high school, one topic I never hear discussed. I heard it discussed in my home. I grew up in a very pro-life home, and the awkward conversations, I remember going to pro-life conferences and being with some of the women who worked for the diocese and the USCCB, and they're talking about STDs at the table, like no big deal sometimes. You know, gonorrhea, chlamydia, just normal conversation. You know, I was aware of these different sexually transmitted diseases, but you know, it's not something you hear discussed anymore, yet the statistics on the increase in sexually transmitted diseases is off the charts. And we are doing, especially young women, a disservice in not talking about them right now.
According to the Center for Disease Control and Prevention, 820,000 new gonorrhea infections each year. In the U.S., can that... That's a lot.
And 78 million people worldwide infected with gonorrhea. Here's the deal that people are not discussing. Gonorrhea specifically, along with other sexually transmitted diseases, but specifically gonorrhea, which is a very common STD, is becoming antibiotic resistant. Basically, what's happening is that this STD is getting used to the different antibiotics that are treating it, and it's mutating and adapting so that the antibiotic can no longer impact it. They're having to use multiple antibiotics at once to attempt and hopefully try to have some impact on fighting gonorrhea.
Now, how is this possible, Timory? Because haven't we been taught about safe sex for several decades now? And you're right, maybe we don't talk about STDs that much, but I suspect that as part of that freshman orientation at your big state school that you go to, probably you're going to get a seminar on how to have promiscuous sex, but also, you know, do it safely, right? You're gonna have sex week at your local school, but they're going to say, no, you got to do it safely. And isn't everybody doing it safely? Aren't they using the very effective contraception? If that's the case, how can we have these millions of new cases every year? Could it be that there is no such thing as safe promiscuous sex?
But people think safe sex, or should we call it, people think smart sex is protected sex, where a baby doesn't result in the end. And that if it does, they have their backup contraception of abortion that ends the life of the child. Here's the deal, Don. I don't know if you... I did a Facebook Live video about a month ago. I think you were in Canada. And it went viral on social media. You can check it out on my Facebook page. But basically, I was at the mall and there were a bunch of Planned Parenthood workers at this very fancy mall that I was at. And they were at every single entrance and exit to the mall. I mean, dozens upon dozens of them. And they were fundraising for Planned Parenthood. And I see their little badge. Normally, I would like run the other way when those people are trying to sell you the hair straighteners and the diamond masks for your face. But I saw
I use those all the time.
I know.
I like the diamonds.
But I see a Planned Parenthood badge, and I'm just getting off of one of the Vox VTake camps, and I just go right in for the conversation. Don't tell them who I am, and just say, hey, you know, I see you work for Planned Parenthood. What are you doing here? Conversation leads on. The woman has no idea about the number of abortions they performed, has no idea about all these different things. She's shocked. But what the conversation ends up coming to is how, well, we're also just trying to help people have safe sex. And I said, I'm sorry. How are you helping people have safe sex? Have you seen that just this summer, there has been a continued spike that we have more sexually transmitted diseases and untreatable diseases than ever before? And she said, well, that's why we give out free condoms. And I said, yes. And condoms do not prevent physical contact still. That just covers a little itty bitty part of your body. Hello. And she goes, oh, well, that's true, but at least it helps. I said, no, it's not. These teens are vulnerable and no one's talking about it. And sorry, especially if you have young ears, you might want to cover them. But anal sex, you're still not covering everything. You still have skin contact. And at the end of the day, I said, you're pro-woman. We are not talking about the fact that sexually transmitted diseases impact women far more than they impact men, if men have any impact at all often.
Yeah, there's a reason I'm calling the new documentary that I'm working on Unprotected, because all of this propaganda from the Planned Parenthood type folks, it's pro-contraception, pro-abortion. They go together. They think, oh, this is going to protect you. No, it does nothing but cause you harm. There's negative consequences as far as the eye can see.
Right.
Physically, emotionally, psychologically. This is just one symptom. We've got cases in Hawaii that are completely untreatable. They're saying, like, the antibiotics we're trying to use on the diseases just morph and transmute, and we can't. These are people who are using condoms. These are people that yes. are doing their best.
That are taking the pill, that think right. they're going to have no consequence for their sex. Let me talk to you about this, people. For a young woman who ends up contracting gonorrhea, if left untreated, and even if it is treated, can lead to infection that causes serious, serious scar tissue in areas, especially like the fallopian tube. It can create long-term abdominal pain, pelvic inflammatory disease. It can lead to ectopic pregnancy where the baby does not move outside of the fallopian tube. There can be an increase in infertility. And if you are pregnant and have gonorrhea, you can give this infection to your baby during delivery. And a lot of women have sexually transmitted diseases and don't know about it. And I have to tell you, Don, working in those crisis pregnancy centers, let me tell you, there were women who came through who gave their baby an STD during birth. And there are lifelong consequences for that woman and that child now.
It's almost scarier than the symptoms. Yeah, I don't know if everybody is aware of this, but most people who are infected don't actually have those symptoms, mm-hmm. but they carry them and pass them on then. And can you imagine right. passing that on to your baby and you didn't even know you had it? Yeah, it's like extra level right. of pain and suffering.
And for a man, More common than not, most men don't end up having symptoms usually, but when they do, it can cause painful conditions in the tubes attached to the testicles. In rare cases, it can even cause the man to be sterile. And, you know, this too is impacting men. It's less common, but at the end of the day, the people who are struggling more with sexually transmitted diseases are women. Women are the ones from STDs who are having their uteruses frozen and de-thawed. Women are the ones who are having to go in for lifelong treatment at times, and we're not talking about it.
You would think if we actually cared that much about women, or about children or men for that matter, but let's just focus on women. You'd think if we actually cared that much about women, we would encourage practices that actually lead to health and flourishing, such as abstinence before marriage, getting into a marriage and sticking with it, finding a guy who is worth committing to and who will commit to you, not use you. All of these things that, you know, we might call moral. Christian morality. What?
Science matches up with Christian morality.
That happiness and flourishing and just to throw that out there, great sexual lives, right? The people who are most happy sexually, if that's what you're after, like, Dawn, I just want the really good sex.
You're monogamous and you wait for marriage.
Yeah, those are the people.
That's it.
Those are the people that have the best lives. Again, we have the answers. Like the science, like you said, the science confirms what the Catholic Church has been teaching for 2,000 years now, again and again and again. It's only the propaganda and the lies. You know, I just did an interview this past week with Sue Ellen Browder, and we've talked about her before.
Oh, she's awesome.
But she, yeah, a lovely lady.
Her book is before we go on about her.
Her book's called Subverted.
Yes.
You can get it from Ignatius Professor on Amazon. Tells her story of writing for Cosmo magazine.
Mm-hmm.
And she essentially helped create the Cosmo Girl, which is the woman that goes out and has a bunch of promiscuous sex. You know, she
cheats
tells
on
the story.
Her husband.
Yeah, she cheats on her husband or doesn't even get married or gets divorced because that's more freeing. Goes off to Paris and has lovely affairs where you have great sex and great wine and live in hotels overlooking the Champs-Élysées. And it's just beautiful. You know, everything's happy. And she's like, I made that up. There are no people like that. Right. I completely created the Cosmo Girl to sell magazine ads. I mean, that's what it's about. It's about selling the stuff that Cosmo Girl's wearing, okay? Mm-hmm. It's all a big lie. It continues to be a big lie. The notion that, you know, all of you students who are going off to college now in the next few weeks and are going to go into those freshman classes where they tell you about how to have safe sex. No, there is no such. It's all lies. That happy, promiscuous lifestyle, the college lifestyle, it's a lie. There is no happy college lifestyle of free and unfettered sex. It's drunkenness. It's depression. It's anxiety. It's STDs. That's the reality.
And those have lifelong impact for so many people. And there are people, women who come into the Crisis Pregnancy Center when I was working there who would say, how do I find that again? That black and white. How do I find feeling in my sexuality even? I feel empty. I'm searching. That's part of the reason why I'm having so much sex now, because at first it was wonderful and pleasurable. And now it's something, yes, it's pleasurable, but there's lacking this deeper intimacy.
Timmery and Dawn will be right back. Tweet them at Timmery. That's T-I-M-M-E-R-I-E. And at Dawn Johnson Media. From the studios of Immaculate Heart Radio, you're listening to Trending. Trending. With Dawn and Timmery, offering an eternal perspective on today's hottest topics.
For those who don't follow the Ruth Institute is an incredible organization, and they are on the front lines talking about marriage. They're in the front lines of the marriage movement, pro-marriage. And they especially talk about marriage and things such as divorce, abortion, in vitro fertilization, third-party reproduction, from the perspective of how it impacts the children. And Dawn, this recent video that the Ruth Institute released on third-party reproduction and donor conception, there's a young woman, Alana Newman, who shares her story, and it is unbelievable to sit there watching this young girl talking about how she recognizes and she learns that, different from her and other children, that she was created strictly to please the people who created her. Her existence was to please other people, and that her happiness needed to be sacrificed for others. So much so that one of the most important things in a person's life, their father, was to be offered up. And before she was even conceived, her father already signed away saying that he would never have any contact with her.
Yeah, again, this is one of those instances, and we talk about it a lot on the show, where the sexual revolution resulted in a lot of casualties, and the main one is children. Women and children, I'd throw out there, but children, not only are they a casualty, but they're always a silent casualty.
Right.
They're always the ones you can never hear about, whether it's victims of divorce or this one. And this is a powerful, powerful video. I highly encourage you to go check that out. Go to the Ruth Institute, Google third-party reproduction and donor conception. This young lady talking about, so just to back up, what happens in donor conception, at least in this case, was the male, the father, donates a sperm, but then signs a paper saying, I will never have anything to do with this child. From the perspective of the child, like you just talked about, that's my dad.
Yeah.
That's not just, you know, some abstract donor. I didn't just fall out of the clouds. I wasn't delivered by a stork. I have a father, and that father wanted nothing to do with
me. He promised to have nothing to do with her. And she said this at one point. She said something along the lines of, and they said that would be a good thing.
Yeah.
And she's here going, this is my story, and it's not. And she said, and no one's talking about the fact that surrogacy, donor conception, donating eggs, all of these have a huge impact on women and on a woman. And she is saying this from the perspective of, I was created this way. And she says, this is a new prostitution. It invites bondage. It invites degradation. It invites the exploitation of women.
Yeah, she talks about it from the perspective of herself as a child, where, and this was very powerful. Before, I want to get back to the prostitution thing, but I don't want to downplay, you mentioned it earlier, the fact that she saw herself as someone created to be used for the happiness of others. And I thought she was so articulate about that. Now, just think about that for a second. Right. So her mother created her for her mother's own enjoyment. And that was the deal, right? She, and the child understands that, that I'm sort of a plaything. I'm like, you know, a purse or an accessory. I'm right. something that you ordered from the store, right? Like you got on Amazon and you designed your baby and you picked me. Right. But think about that. Do you want to be thought of like a purse? Or, and this, I'm not, she didn't say I'm like a purse. I'm extrapolating from that. But do you want to be considered a product of somebody, for somebody else's happiness?
Well, and she even talks about how, you know, I agreed with her. They designed me, but things like my hair color, my eye color, all these different things about what I would like look like, that agreed with my mom. She goes, what if I didn't agree with her?
What if she had been born without one arm? She talks about this sort of thing. Like, what if I had been born deformed? Would I still be pleasing to my mother? And then would I just be discarded?
Right.
Yes, probably so.
People, we have to see that when we took sex outside of marriage, babies outside of sex, we turned children into commodities that were either wanted or unwanted. In a show a couple weeks back, we were talking about this crazy argument that this professor from Princeton had with James Franco on his Philosopher's Hour, and how she's talking about a right to abortion and so forth. But what was so at the bottom line here, what she was talking about was the child being wanted or unwanted. And if it's unwanted, you have a moral right to abort the fetus because the baby is a different being that has no moral status. If it's wanted, then that child has moral status. It's a totally ridiculous argument. But here we're coming back to the same idea. When we took that mindset of abortion, that a child is either wanted or unwanted, we then took that mindset into divorce. If I get a divorce, I don't want my kids. My kids are unwanted. I don't have to have them. I can just maybe pay a little bit of money for them. Or I could dump them off at my spouse's house or my ex-spouse's house. Same thing now with these designer babies and IVF. These children are the ones who live today knowing I should be grateful because my mom chose life. Or I should be grateful that I was created. But what about the fact that a child should have a natural right to a mother and a father?
It all goes together with the whole contraceptive mindset, really.
Yes.
A child growing up in a culture that is contraceptive knows in the back of their mind that there's a lot of kids out there that weren't born.
They were a mistake.
Yes, that maybe I was born because either A, I was wanted, or I was a mistake. But that idea is very similar. I don't think there's a, I mean, there is a difference, but there's not a ton of difference between a child growing up in a contraceptive culture and a child who was actually specifically chosen via the donor thing, right, and created in a test tube or whatever, the test tube baby. Mm-hmm. That's just taking the contraceptive mindset and pushing it forward a little bit. That also ties into, she talks about, well, what if I had been deformed or whatever. We're looking in the news recently at, was it Iceland or Denmark, where they have
right.
done away with all of the kids who have Down syndrome. We no longer have kids with Down syndrome. Why? Because we've killed them all. We have aborted every child that would have been born in whatever that Scandinavian country was. And they have a zero rate because everyone that shows up on the sonar gets aborted. Well, if you're a child in that culture, maybe you're a child that was born with Down syndrome, but even if you're not, you realize that you are only there based on certain qualities that you didn't have a choice over. Okay, what if it's only blonde kids, or only dark-haired kids, or only kids with two arms? What if you were born with one arm? Your thinking as a child then is, I am not secure in my position here. I am not loved unconditionally.
Right.
I am a plaything for you, and my position is very tenuous. If I do not please you, this girl talks about that. She's a, I'm just here to please. I'm just here to be your plaything, to do what you want me to do. If that's your mindset, that's unhealthy, that you're not considering yourself. You talked, you know, we've talked recently about the rise in depression and suicide and all these things. Well, if you're not loved unconditionally based on your inherent value as a person, if there's some condition set on that, well, I need to perform this particular thing, or I need to have these characteristics, or I need to look a certain way. I don't have these, you know, I'm too fat, I'm too ugly, I have Down syndrome, all of these things. Therefore, I don't have value. Well, guess what? Then if you don't have value, you're going to be depressed. And so, yeah, all of these issues, we can't just say, oh, well, hey, you know, all of these new reproductive technologies, hey, it's all good. No, think about the kids.
There are consequences. Yeah. And I think that people often don't think about consequences in our culture right now. They think about, it's how I feel right now. It's how I was impacted. It's about how I was a victim. You know, I'm thinking of things like 13 Reasons Why. Again, going, you guys are the reason for this, what you did to me. But there's a point, you know what? All of us have brokenness and great harm that was done to us. And this is part of the path as a Christian. We choose to pick our feet back up and keep walking. We choose to say no in great temptation. We choose to run to that confessional when we make mistakes, whatever it might be. But this is where I think the church is at the core. You know, being willing to say, I have made mistakes, I am broken, and I need that healing. I need that good in my life. Because otherwise, you guys, we are completely turning a blind eye if we think that what we do does not have any type of consequences for our future, and especially the now and future of other people.
And let's, before the break, I want to make sure we come back to the harm that it is doing to the women, too, not just the kids, but right. She talks about her mother basically being a prostitute, that the reproductive technologies that allow you to grow babies, designer babies, you are basically paying women. And of course, the surrogacy is right. A big deal. You've been offered this several. Doesn't this pop up on your screen?
I have. You know what? We need to talk really seriously for a minute here, because we are not talking about egg donor or donating eggs, because it's a private thing that women are doing on their own. It's something that I have been advertised at multiple times and offered in person. Here, donate your eggs. Pay off your student loans. You're a dancer. You're a physically fit person. You're going to have pretty healthy eggs to donate. You can help women who can't have children. And you can make a lot of money doing this. And women are doing it and aren't saying a word. It is incredibly unhealthy for the woman's body to go through the process of donating multiple eggs. Your body takes high levels of hormones that basically treat the body to pump out more than one, two, or three eggs at a time. That is extremely taxing on the body and has long-term health consequences, even preventing future fertility at times.
And what about the emotional consequences?
You are helping and creating a life down the road. Not that an egg is a new human life, to be clear, for people who criticize pro-lifers, but you are allowing for the ability to actually mother a child that you will never know. And you're denying your child that right to her natural born mother. You're not saying, hey, this is best for you. You're saying, I'm creating you, baby, to possibly have no mother or father.
Timmery and Don will be right back. Tweet them at Timmery. That's T-I-M-M-E-R-I-E and at Don Johnson Media. This is Trending with Don and Timmery on Immaculate Heart Radio. To learn more about Don Johnson or Timmery Millington, or to book either of them to speak, visit DonJohnsonMinistries.org or Timmery.com. And be sure to share and rate the podcast of the show on iTunes.
Don, you've been traveling all summer. In fact, you are traveling just this last week again for more interviews for your new documentary. Can you tell everyone a little bit more about Unprotected and give us a teaser? Because I know we've been talking about it, but when will some of the videos be coming out and who have your favorite interviews been with?
Oh, that's a, you threw a real tough question out there. Each interview has been different, but fascinating and wonderful in its own way. The most recent one we did was Sue Ellen Browder, who wrote for Cosmopolitan magazine back in the 70s. Late 60s, early 70s, was a writer who sold the sexual revolution. She calls herself a propagandist. I just made up stories to get people to buy stuff.
That's what you were saying earlier in the episode. It's amazing.
Oh, such a powerful story, and really how it affected her own life. I mean, you can feel the guilt that she feels in getting women to, in fact, abandon their husbands, right? Like, she'll just admit, like, the stories I was writing that were completely made up, I know caused women to get divorces, to get abortions, to have promiscuous sex that probably ruined their lives. Indeed, she severely harmed her own life. She says, at the beginning, I was leading a bit of a double life where, hey, I was happily married and we had a kid, but I was writing all of these stories about women. She didn't cheat, but she did have an unplanned pregnancy after she started taking the pill. What happened was, she started taking the pill because she was selling all this stuff. She says, well, this is what women do. We contracept. And so the pill, though, had major negative consequences on her. Very depressive, had all sorts of anxiety. And so when her doctor basically dismissed her issues, so she went to the doctor, she's like, these pills are making me crazy. I don't want to take them. Oh, you know, you're probably just having a hard week. Totally dismissed it, gave her a new prescription. She says, I was so anxious about taking them that I wouldn't
take them. Give her an anxiety medication along with the pills? Is that what they did?
I don't think they did that.
That's common.
Yeah, well, now I think that would be common.
Yes.
Yeah. At the time, she was just dismissed. Oh, you know, you silly woman. So, but she wouldn't take the pills then, and she got pregnant. And what happens when you get pregnant in those days? And so she actually had an abortion. Mm-hmm. And this, she says, my husband and I tamped it down. And if you've read the book Subverted, it's a very powerful story about her and her husband. Years later, decades later, when they finally thought about entering the Catholic Church, the first time they met with the priest, her husband, first thing he blurted, it comes out of his mouth, we've had an abortion.
He needed to get it off
and
his chest.
And all of these years, this had been like right there. This pain and suffering had been right there at the front of their relationship, but never talked about. Mm-hmm. And so the cleansing and the healing that she had then, entering the church and finding forgiveness for all the propaganda and the abortion and all of this stuff. Very powerful story. But that's just one example of a person experiencing the sexual revolution. We've got many of those. And so we will be telling that story in documentary form, featuring experts and stories from people like Jennifer Robeck Morse, who we interviewed, Christopher West. We're going out to Phoenix here in a couple of weeks to talk to Lila Miller about the effects of divorce. Mm-hmm. At the same time, we're going to be talking with the Everts, Jason and Kristalina, about their work at the Chastity Project. So very powerful. You can still support this project. We still need funds. Go to Reverse the Revolution or DonJohnsonMinistries.org and hit the donate button. We will make sure that money goes directly to supporting this project.
And I'm just going to push this. A lot of the time, people, I think, don't realize that when these projects are taken up, it is taken up saying, I see that this is something that is needed. And while there are great campaigns made to raise funds and to support it, these projects, in order to be effective and to truly get the face time in front of other people, need your support. So if you have your story that you've experienced and you recognize the need of this, please consider donating in the name of your experience, donating to this project, donating for others to not go through the brokenness and pain that so many men and women have experienced. You know, I was thinking about this. You know, we've seen over the last few months, there's been an increase in extramarital infidelity among the boomer generation up. In fact, that they're less faithful, we're seeing, than the younger generations. And I hear Sue Ellen's story. And I mean, family members, extended family members of mine who are part of the sexual revolution age that they grew up, these are the people who have had 20-year-long marriages but still have this mindset. It's okay to cheat and have extramarital relationships. That's okay.
Yeah. Now, that's true. The boomer generation, even now, reading Lila Miller's book about divorce, so many of those divorces, unfortunately, are happening after 20 years, after 25 years, after 30 years of marriage. It's so sad. But again, it's a result of the sexual revolution. So yeah, we will have a little teaser video. In fact, if you were watching my wife's Instagram live feed, she was like doing Sue Ellen's interview as we did it. And so that would
awesome.
Be one way. We'll release some videos here shortly, and we've got a lot more coming up.
Speaking of marriage, divorce, and some of the struggles right now, really interesting perspective that people have not really, I think, taken up yet, and that is that divorce lawyers are speaking out about pornography and how we have seen, and we've known this, that the vast majority, I believe that it's over 60%, and those are just people who admit it, 60% of divorces that take place, they have in some way extramarital, not just extramarital relationships, but really pornography being sought outside of the marriage.
Well, I think that was actually an accurate phrase, because yes. That's what porn is, right? It's
right.
An extramarital thing. You're cheating on your spouse.
Well, and it's leading to extramarital behavior as well.
Yeah, exactly. This is interesting. You talk about the 60% stat. That was done in a questionnaire of 350 divorce attorneys, but you know what? Back in 2002.
Right.
So you know how much more porn now we have available? The stats on this have got to be incredibly high. And what's also interesting about this, before we dig into some of the details here, is that this is divorce lawyers. You know who benefits from divorce? Divorce lawyers.
The lawyers,
right?
Do.
These are the people that are actually making money off this.
It's
Jennifer Roback Morse talks about the divorce industrial complex.
Oh.
Right? And you're like, there's a lot of money to be made at divorce.
Right.
For these people to be saying, gosh, you guys, porn is going a little crazy. Like, these are the ones that are even benefiting from that.
They're being paid for you guys
they're
to separate.
They're seeing it as such a problem that even they are speaking out saying, this porn thing is killing your marriages.
Well, and here's an interesting story, because most of the time, do you think people want to admit that they have a pornography addiction, that it helped in them having separated? One attorney, a family law and divorce attorney, John Matthews, talks about how he found that in most of the cases, while divorce has been prevalent, that in the beginning, usually they do not want to admit to having looked at pornography. The spouses deny it. But during a discovery, a process where basically each spouse is given a list of questions, under oath, the truth comes out. And again, we're seeing well over 60% of cases that not only was there some pornography being looked at, but there is excessive interest in addiction taking place.
And let's just cut to the chase as to how this plays out in marriage. And again, this is, as usual on Trending, be careful with the little ears. These divorce lawyers tell stories of a 3-4 year span where the spouses are not actually having any sex. What happens with porn is it decreases your intimacy with right. real people. That's what porn does. You're objectifying others, and you're no longer loving those next to you. Porn kills love. That's what it does. We've talked about that on the show. That's what happens when you objectify. To objectify others is to cease to love them. It's the antithesis of love. And if you are objectifying those on the screen, or even objectifying, I think what happens is you start to try to objectify everyone around you. Guess what? Your wife does not want to be objectified. Your wife's not interested in being your porn star.
Right.
And so you just cease to have sex.
And she can't meet those expectations that are unreal because those videos are so heavily edited. It's changing your libido, and it's sitting in self-centered masturbation mode of it's just about me and the pleasure I experience.
Yeah, that's right. You know, we talked about earlier in the show about the girl who was the product of a donation service, right? Donor conceived child, and how she saw herself as someone who existed for the pleasure of others. Same thing with porn, right? You begin to see yourself as someone who exists solely for the pleasure of others. Now, that doesn't work for intimacy, right? And so to only view others as objects for your pleasure, of course, kills relationships. And that's why it is increasing divorces. It's killing marriages. It's also why, just to look at another story that we have on the list here, why you're going to less marriages.
Yeah, fewer people are getting married now. And part of it is because people just say, hey, we can just shack up. We can just live together. doesn't matter if we get married, but also more people are focused on the price tag, how much they're spending on the wedding. They're spending more on the wedding, going to special locations and destinations, and they're inviting fewer people for this special moment.
Yeah, and you got to think, well, why would people get married in this day and age, right? If they just view it as something that, well, we get together for a while, it costs a lot for the wedding, and then, well, guess what? It costs a lot for the divorce. Right. And who wants to go through all that when I can just get sex from you for a little while and then move on to the next person? Of course, marriage is declined. Right.
Of course, with all the brokenness people are experiencing. I mean, we're talking about pornography, donor conception. A lot of people are scared that people are going to remain faithful. The Catholic Church teaches that marriages are called to be total gift. We are giving ourselves totally to the other person. We're called to be completely faithful. It's called to be permanent, and it's called to be fecundant, fruitful. And these things, you don't have that permanence. You don't have that faithfulness. No wonder people are afraid.
Timmery and Dawn will be right back. Tweet them at Timmery. That's T-I-M-M-E-R-I-E. And at Dawn Johnson Media. Views expressed on Trending with Dawn and Timmery are for educational purposes only.
A fantastic opportunity coming up if you like to travel. And hey, who doesn't like to travel? And you want to go with your favorite radio host, Timmery Millington has an offer for you.
If only you were coming with us, Dawn.
We'll work it out for next time.
I'm really excited. I've been asked by Select International Tours, who lead pilgrimages all over the world, to participate in a pilgrimage to Italy. So we'll be going to Rome and Assisi in April, end of April, a couple weeks after Easter. So during the Easter season, which I think is also such a beautiful time in April to go to Rome and Assisi. The weather's nice. You might get some rain, but it's sunny. It's not quite so cold. We'll be flying. Anyone is welcome to participate and attend. We were at the Elevate conference a few weeks ago, and it was so funny. One dad goes, "So how old do you have to be?" I said, "Anyone can come. You know, if they're underage, they need to have, you know, adults with them." But he said, "I want to send my daughter. I just want her to come and spend time with you." And I said, "Oh, well, you'd probably have to come." He goes, "No, she's 27. I'm just going to send her." And I laughed so hard because in part, this is the purpose, is that I'm excited to be able to go with our listeners or different people I speak and interact with and bring along from the community of St. John this incredible priest, Father Bernard Mary, who comes from a monastic lifestyle of prayer and preaching, and who will be bringing the divine office throughout the day, adoration, daily mass. We'll be traveling to places throughout the Vatican and the Vatican Gardens, which are awesome. I personally am not a huge fan of like the Vatican itself. I think it's beautiful.
What?
But
okay.
I think there are a lot of other neater churches around there.
Yeah.
It's too grand, I think, for like my taste personally. But we'll go to places like St. Clement's Cathedral, or we'll be at the catacombs. We'll be traveling to where St. Maria Goretti lived and died. Mm. I mean, a patron of chastity in so many ways. We'll have a papal audience, and then 3 days we'll spend in Assisi. We'll even, for those who want to hike, other people can ride in the cars. We'll hike up to the Hermitage where St. Francis lived, the little church that St. Francis built, and the big cathedral around it. We'll see where St. Clair and St. Francis' bodies are. And this is going to be a special experience.
Wow, that does sound fantastic. So I'm a guy who has hosted tours before, and I want to ask you a very practical question, because I know on tours this comes up, and it's something to be aware of. Is it a hiking thing? Do you have to be able to walk a certain distance to go on your tour?
No, we'll have buses and transportation and guides with us the whole time. The only time that'll be a hiking time it's optional is to hike up to the Hermitage. And for those who don't feel comfortable, because I personally love to hike,
yeah,
and they don't feel comfortable walking or can't for whatever reason, or it's hot, there will be cars available to take you to and from.
Very good. Okay, that's just something to be aware of, because I know that I have been on tours that go either way, where you're like, you know what, I'm sorry, this is just going to be a little bit more of an active tour if you really want to, right? And others, you can just basically sort of stay with the bus or not go too far. And so something to be aware of. This sounds fantastic.
And there'll be free time throughout the trip as well if people want to take off, go and roam around as well. So if you want details, you can check out. I put some information up at my website, timory.com, and you can find more details and join us in April.
Very good. Timory.com. A little piece from the Washington Post business section, Timory. Young Americans are less likely to be homeowners, car owners, or parents than their predecessors, but they do lead in one category. Pets. Now, I know this is one of those issues where you and I, we don't quite line up. We don't quite line up with the generations that we belong to. Here's the thing. 3/4 of Americans in their 30s have dogs. 75%. That's a lot of dogs. 51% have cats.
Which I can't understand.
Okay. Still, that's too high of a number. But 50% overall population have dogs and 35% have cats. So the younger folks, 30s and below, have dogs. And I have noticed this. In fact, I was talking to my wife about this. I can't remember where we were, but we weren't out in the field somewhere. It wasn't like a bunch of people with ranches. It was like this urban setting. And we were just taken aback by how many dogs there were. Like, we were just overrun with dogs. And listen, I like dogs, okay? I don't mind dogs. I like them. I had a dog growing up. Okay, I'm okay with dogs. However, I am now, I've talked about this before on the show. We have a guinea pig. That's our one pet.
Which that I don't understand.
Okay, and I get that. Okay, and the poor guinea pig. All right. Anyway, what do we make of this desire among the younger generation to not only have pets, but listen, have you been on an airplane lately? How many little dogs do you see popping out of people's purses and stuff?
But they're therapeutic.
I think they are therapeutic, but I don't think in the way we're talking about. These people with their dogs and their bags and these are surrogate children. That's what I'm going to throw that out there. I think that's what they are.
They're not having children. They're lonely. They're not getting married. They're living further away from home. So they're replacing family members with pets. Their family is essentially their pet or multiple pets. And it's so sad because here's the thing that's always interesting to me. I feel that a lot of people are intolerant of crying babies, and I get it. It can be annoying. You know, I fly a lot anymore. I hear crying babies very often on planes, and I actually always feel bad when people are angry. Grant, I agree that it can be annoying, but they're people.
Well, it is annoying, but again, put yourself. Yeah. I've also been the parent with the kid. Listen, relax a little bit. Yeah.
And even in church, you know, I feel bad for them. And sure, there are things you can definitely do in church to prevent a distractible crying baby. But this is what's interesting. I'm out to eat in all of these open patio areas. These dogs are like crawling up on me, drooling and licking me. And I'm the person that's rude because I'm offended or I ask to move tables.
Oh, that's a great point.
I mean, it's unbelievable that people prefer animals over kids, and they have more tolerance for animals than they do for crying children.
I remember now, it came to me where we were. It was a hotel. That's where it was.
Oh,
it was
no.
A hotel. And they had dog rooms. Because there was like, why are there so many dogs? But it was a hotel for dog owners, essentially. They had a whole wing. Oh. They had a whole wing of this hotel. Yeah.
Oh, my God.
Where you could have your dog, big, huge dogs. And anyway, listen, this is from the Washington Post. This is not us, okay? This is the Washington Post. Here's what the findings point out, according to Jean Twenge, who's a psychology professor at San Diego State. They are this generation. They're half as likely to be married or living with a partner as they were 50 years ago. They're delaying parenthood. They're demanding flexible work arrangements. And all of that to say that they are having pets instead of children. That's the bottom line.
Well, this is the thing that I can't understand. I have a lot of friends and different people I know who I'll ask them to do something. Oh, I can't. Why? I don't have a dog sitter. I can't leave the dog for that long. Or I need to go home and have you with me driving an hour or something in the middle of traffic. And I mean, it makes sense when you realize that people are so obsessed with their pets. Do you know that the pet industry is a $63 billion industry? And get this, it's grown threefold just in the last 20 years.
Yeah. Wow. Well, hey, 71% of men between ages 18 and 34 have dogs. 71%. Here's the motive or here's the explanation. They're less expensive. You can get one even if you're not ready to live with someone or get married, and they can still provide companionship. Now, again, even the notion that we are comparing pets to children, it doesn't show as much about our attitude towards pets as it does about our attitude towards children,
right?
How do we view those children? Essentially, as more expensive pets. They are someone who provides something to our lives. And yeah, they cost a little bit of money and all the rest of it. But we talked about that Ruth Institute video of the girl who saw herself as someone who existed for someone else's pleasure. Well, with a pet, that's okay. That's not okay for a child. And I think it speaks more to our attitudes towards children, this pet ownership thing, than it does. I mean, hey, you want to be a pet owner, fine. You want to love your pets, go for it. I have no problem with you treating animals, fine. The problem is that we treat our children oftentimes as just more expensive pets.
Right. Well, and this is what's funny, too. A friend of mine had actually reached out to me about this because she was so irritated. People are talking all the time about how essentially the pets are better and more behaved. For example, if you want to have photo shoots, use your cats. They're much more better behaved. They behave better than a person. They pose well. Your pictures turn out better. Well, yeah, it's a cat.
It reminds... Okay, so I was reminded of a friend of mine. She wanted more kids. He didn't. They compromised. They're going to get a dog. It just made me think of the photo... Yeah, I'm looking at... There's a story here about these photo shoot of these cats and how it's easier, and I just think, oh man, what are we doing? I don't want to be anti. I'm not anti pet. If you want to get a nice expensive dog, do that. Treat them well.
The problem is putting a pet above a person,
yeah,
and the fact that people of the millennial generation are not having children. They're less satisfied than ever before. They're more depressed, more anxiety. They need these quote unquote service dogs and, you know, these pets to help them in their loneliness and isolation. But the reality is we are called to get married and have children. Unless you're called to a religious life or other circumstances prevent it. That is the way. I mean, there have been studies that have shown, we've talked about TED Talks, where people are more happy when they have closer relationships, marriages in particular, they remain faithful to those marriages and have families.
Well, and I just think, you know, when my wife and I got married, we had a couple of cats. You know what happened to the cats after we had kids? They went by. And again, I think you'll see that if you want to compare relationships with people compared to pets, right? There is no real comparison. Mm-hmm. We were made for love, and yes, treat animals well, but love is a two-way street between two human beings. Don't forget to go to timory.com. Check out the Italy pilgrimage. It's going to be awesome. Go to donjohnsonministries.org or reversetherevolution.com to find out more about my latest documentary. We'll see you next time.
This has been Trending with Don and Timory on Immaculate Heart Radio. Trending. To learn more about Don Johnson or Timory Millington, or to book either of them to speak, visit donjohnsonministries.org or timory.com. And be sure to share and rate the podcast of the show on iTunes.